Bienvenue and welcome to The Musical Man, the podcast that shines new light on the Tony Award for Best Musical. Each week we examine the nominees and winners of that esteemed decoration, and this week we'll be discussing Spring Awakening.
You have to excuse me, I know it's so off. I love when you do stuff that's rude and so wrong. I go up to my room, turn the stereo on, shoot up some music. Some song.
Live actors drifted and play out these scenes. I ride on the rush, all the hopes, all the dreams. I may be neglecting the things I should do. We've all got our junk, and my junk is you.
How are we doing? As always, I hope that this, the latest episode of The Musical Man, finds you well. I did not see the trailer for Wicked, all right? Stop screaming at me. Patty, Benny, I'm talking to you. You're yelling at me. Oh, no, it's not my fault that I didn't see the trailer before Godzilla Kong, the new empire. But you know what I did see? I saw the trailer for The Crow, and we're going to spend the next 10 minutes talking. I'm not going to do that. No. that's a late April Fool's joke for you, listeners. I'm hilarious. Well, I see the trailer for Wicked before Monkey Man. Chris and I are seeing Monkey Man later today. I highly doubt we will see the trailer for Wicked, but you never know in this crazy world what's going to happen next. You know what I mean? Let's talk about the show facts regarding this week's subject, Spring Awakening. Patty, Betty, if you could stop yelling. Stop yelling at me, please. I have to share the show facts. Show me the show facts. All right. Okay, let's do it. Spring Awakening was the 2007 winner of the Tony Award for Best Musical. It opened on December 10th, 2006 at the Eugene O'Neill Theater and ran for 859 performances. The book was written by Stephen Sader, music by Duncan Sheik, lyrics by Stephen Sader. Hello again, Stephen. The basis for this week's subject is Spring Awakening, the 1891 play by Frank Vendekind, let's say. I apologize if I mispronounce anyone's name. I always do my best, but you know, mistakes are made. The director of the original Broadway production of Spring Awakening was Michael Mayer, and the musical director was Kimberly Grigsby. Orchestrations, Duncan Sheik. Vocal arrangements, Anne-Marie Malazzo. Choreographer, Bill T. Jones. Scenic design, Christine Jones. Lighting design, Kevin Adams. Sound design, Brian Ronan. Costume design, Susan Helferty. And the original Broadway cast was as follows. I want to start with the Broadway debuts. Hey! Congratulations, Broadway debuts. Skylar Astin, Lily Cooper, Jennifer Damiano, and Gideon Glick. We also have some Broadway veterans in the mix here. Gerard Canonico, Christine Estabrook, John Gallagher Jr., Jonathan Groff, Robert Hager, Brian Charles Johnson, Leah Michelle, hello Leah, Lauren Pritchard, Krista Rodriguez, Stephen Spinelli, Phoebe Stroll, Jonathan B. Wright, and finally, last but certainly not least, Remy Zakin. All right, okay, that's the cast. Let's talk about Tony nods. All right, Spring Awakening won the following Tony Awards. Best Musical, of course. Best Book of a Musical, Stephen Sader. Best Original Score, Duncan Sheik and Stephen Sader. Best Featured Actor in a Musical, John Gallagher Jr. Best Choreography, Bill T. Jones. Best Direction of a Musical, Michael Mayer. Best Orchestrations, Duncan Sheik. And Best Lighting Design of a Musical, Kevin Adams. Additional nominations. We also have Best Actor in a Musical, Jonathan Groff. Best Scenic Design of a Musical, Christine Jones. £10 and Best Costume Design of a Musical, Susan Hilferty. All right, so that's 11 nominations, 8 awards when all was said and done. My God, you really can't get much better than that. What a ratio. My God, ah, I love a fraction. I love a ratio where there's more awards than you can even hold. Try holding 11 Tony Awards. I'll wait, okay? Let's talk about the plot of Spring Awakening. I do want to provide a content warning to anyone who might not be familiar with this show. We're going to be talking about suicide, death as a subject in general. We have trauma, we have abuse, mature themes out the wazoo. Of the musicals we've covered on the main feed, this is the third in a row to invoke suicide. And to that I say, enough already! Enough with the suicide. All right, Act 1. Okay, so per a character breakdown I found online, all of the teenagers, I should say this before we dive into Act 1, all of the teenage characters in Spring Awakening are explicitly 14 years old, so just keep that in mind. And if you're not familiar with the show, you really only need to keep track of 3 character names for me, all right? Help me help you. We have Venla, Melchior, and Moritz, okay? Venla, Melchior, Moritz. Just keep those, names in your brain, all right? All right. In late 19th century Germany, the late 1800s, Venla Bergman confronts her mother and demands to learn the facts of life. I am tired of being treated like a child. Mummy, tell me, where do babies come from? A panicked Frau Bergman lies to her daughter, stating that a baby can only be conceived when a woman loves her husband very, 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 very much. Yeah, that's the ticket. Venla commiserates with her friends Martha, Thea, Anna, and Ilsa, as they are similarly frustrated by mothers who wish for them to remain ignorant. We wipe transition, or a star wipe if you prefer, to the local school, where Melchior Gabor is whipped for defending his best pal Moritz Stiefel? I don't know. In a private moment, Moritz describes a dream to Melchior, one he believes to be a symptom of insanity. Melchior, having learned about sex through books, explains to Moritz that his dream is a perfectly normal erotic fantasy. A skeptical Moritz asks Melchior to explain himself further in the form of an essay. Later, as the girls daydream about their future husbands, Moritz berates Melchior. The essay on sex has proven to be a gift and a curse, enlightening the once naive Moritz, while causing his dreams to become even hornier than usual. Melchior and Venla cross paths near a large tree. The two were friends once upon a time, and their connection remains strong, though they choose to ignore their mounting desire for one another. Ah! Moritz is overjoyed to discover he passed his midterm exams, a fact he confirms by sneaking a peek at the results. What Moritz does not know, oh no, is that his teacher and the headmaster are conspiring against him. The school routinely fails students who technically, yes, receive passing grades, but, otherwise do not live up to the school's lofty standards. And Moritz's head is currently on the chopping block, oh no. Martha accidentally reveals to her friends that she is physically and sexually abused by her father. She begs the girls to keep her secret, knowing Ilsa was similarly abused by her parents before being thrown into the street. Ilsa does not have a home, she lives on the street. Venla has no idea what to do with this information. Longing to understand Martha's pain, she asks Melchior to beat her with a switch. Melchior reluctantly complies. Within moments, he is overwhelmed with an anger and lust for violence that leaves him feeling mortified. He flees, unwittingly leaving his journal behind for Venla to discover. Having learned he has failed at school, Moritz tearfully confides in his father. Herr Stiefel, feeling nothing but shame and disgust, rejects his son without a second thought. Moritz writes to Melchior's mother, Fanny Gabor. He begs for money that will allow him to sail to America. Fanny refuses the request while encouraging Moritz to remain strong. Venla finds Melchior in a hayloft during a thunderstorm. She returns his journal and they proceed to have sex. Though Venla gives Melchior her consent, it's clear she remains unclear, great writing, Jonathan, as to what is happening. She is unclear as to what is happening or what could happen as a result of their decision. Act 2. Moritz, now homeless, he has been kicked out of the house by his father, runs into Ilse, who reveals she has been living at an artist's colony. She invites Moritz to join her. He rejects the offer only to second-guess himself, but by that time Ilse has vanished. In despair, Moritz shoots himself. The children attend Moritz's funeral and reflect on how their lives are being ruined by the adults who surround them. The teacher and headmaster start to get a little twitchy. They know they are to blame for Moritz's suicide and are eager to identify a scapegoat. They rifle through Moritz's belongings and stumble upon Melchior's essay on sex. Ah ha ha! Perfection! Melchior is quickly condemned and expelled. Oh, it's the essay's fault. Yeah, Melchior, bad. In other news, a pair of boys named Hanschen and Ernst make out for a while. Do we ever hear about this or them again? I'm pretty sure we do not. It's called a subplot, Jonathan. I know. It just sort of feels like we're adding the gays as a dash of flavoring, but sure, I get where you're coming from. Fine. Frau Bergman, Venla's mother, takes an ailing Venla to a doctor who concludes the girl is suffering from anemia. Why is my voice sounding like this? This is yet another lie. A lie. In truth, Venla is pregnant. Frau Bergman berates Venla for the name of the child's father, which Venla provides, but only after attacking her mother for dishonesty. You never taught me the facts of life, mummy. Melchior's mother and father are informed of Venla's pregnancy. They choose to withhold this news from their son and send him off to reform school, believing this to be the right and moral decision. Venla and Melchior exchange letters, one of which makes mention of the baby. Of course it does. Melchior is stunned. He escapes from the reform school just as Venla's mother presents her to an abortionist. Upon returning home, Melchior encounters Ilse. Everyone's always encountering Ilse. He gives her a letter meant for Venla that calls for a meeting at the cemetery. Ilse pockets the letter, knowing Melchior has not heard about Venla's fate. Oh no, what happened? Melchior arrives at the cemetery and pays tribute to Moritz before spying a freshly dug grave. Yes, I'm sorry to report, the grave is meant for Venla, who died during the abortion procedure. Isn't this such a lovely show? Melchior vows to kill himself with a razor. Isn't this a lovely show? But the spirits of Moritz and Venla, urge him to reconsider. Do not kill yourself, Melchior. Live, damn you, boo. Live to see a better day, boo. Their entreaties prove effective. Melchior and the teens who remain resolve to improve their world for the sake of future generations. Hooray, the end. Okay, all right. For the purposes of this week's episode, I began my research by sitting down, revisiting the 2006 original Broadway cast album of Spring Awakening. I then watched the 2007 Tony Awards performance of Mama Who Bore Me, the Mama Who Bore Me reprise, The Bitch of Living, and Totally Fucked. I did not appreciate the Zach Braff jump scare. At the top of this upload. Why is he introducing this performance? I don't understand. Ugh. You just get the final, like, half second of Zach Braff. Ugh. I did not like that. How many gay boys, this is a question I have, how many gay boys experienced their activation moment, activate, when Jonathan Groff leaned forward in that chair and sang into that handheld microphone? Hello? That's activating an entire generation of gay boys. That's my theory, at least. And why, here's another question, why Does that one guy, I don't know who this is, and I don't know what character he's playing, I don't care, but why does he look like a dang bug? He's got a weird little haircut, it's very strange, little beetle glasses. I don't like it, he's giving me Alice in Wonderland vibes. Who are you? And I don't like it, I don't like it. And then I watched the 2016 Tony Awards performance of Mama Who Bore Me and The Bitch of Living. This performance represents the 2015 Deaf West Theater Revival, which ran for 135 performances at the Brooks Atkinson Theater and was nominated for Best Revival. It lost out to The Color Purple, much to the chagrin of all of the YouTube users who leave comments under this particular performance. Everyone is so mad, and I would say maybe get over it. The revival was celebrated for its integration. Celebrated! For its integration of deaf and hearing performers and use of American Sign Language, as well as its cast, which includes future Tony winner Ali Stroker, who was the first actor to appear on Broadway in a wheelchair when she appeared in the Spring Awakening revival. There had never been in the history of Broadway, there had never been an example of an actor using a wheelchair as part of a production. Someone who actually used a wheelchair, if you know what I mean, as opposed to an actor pretending, you know, for the sake of a performance, yes, I'm in a wheelchair. No, Ali Stroker actually uses a wheelchair, and that is the distinction that we are making here. Wild to consider that. And we also have Andy Melendez of Smash fame. That's what I wrote down. I could say that, right? He's Smash level famous. He's a cutie patootie. He's not a cream pie cutie. All right, he's not in the cream pie cutie club, but he's, you know, he's pretty cute. I know it wouldn't have been a complete reflection of the production, but I'm still surprised this revival did not receive a cast recording. I insist, I've said it before and I'll say it again, all musicals, revivals, original or otherwise, deserve cast recordings. I did not. Oh no! Watch the 2022 HBO Max documentary Spring Awakening, Those You've Known. But I did watch the trailer, and I'll say this, that was enough. It felt long. At one point, original cast member Lauren Pritchard Cobb says, to quote her, quote, "The gay scene, abortion, the sex, the suicide, there was never anything like this that's ever happened on stage." Quote, what? That is a wild statement. Lauren, are we talking like in totality? There had never been an example of all of these elements together in one production? Maybe, yeah, we could make that distinction. We could also stand to be slightly less hyperbolic, I would say. Okay? And also maybe leave your victories in the past. I know the documentary is all about a reunion concert for the original cast, and everyone really seems to be enjoying that victory lap, but you know, sometimes, most of the time, the victory lap ain't always necessary. Just, you know, wear your badge of honor, allow the feather to be in your cap. You don't need to draw attention to it after 15 years. And that's just, that's my opinion. Okay, let's talk about the score of Spring Awakening, such as it is. Oh no, I'm giving myself away. Let's begin with Mama Who Bore Me.
Mama Who Bore Me. Me, Mama, who gave me no way to handle things, who made me so sad. Mama, the weeping, Mama, the angels, no sleep in heaven or Bethlehem. Some pray that one day. Yeah.
Okay, can I make a confession right at the top of this segment? I am not a fan of Spring Awakening, and living with this truth has been and continues to be a bummer, because it's one thing, you know, to not like high spirits, let's say, or how now, Dow Jones, right? Nobody really cares about those shows. Entire fandoms have not formed around those shows. Spring Awakening, on the other hand, is a big deal to a hell of a lot of people. I acknowledge that, and I wish, I really do, I wish it was a big deal for me, but it's not. I revisited this score with an open mind and heart. I was more than ready to become a late-to-the-party convert, but my glorious hallelujah moment never arrived. The score struck me as repetitive and sleepy and sappy and uncool when I was an uncool, sleepy, sappy, and repetitive college student back in 06, and I had the same reaction this week. Spring Awakening was not and is not my bag, baby. Wicked is my bag. The Scarlet Pimpernel is my bag. We know this. I cannot pretend to be interested in a probing analysis of today's subject, and I would ask its devotees to forgive me for not providing one. I cannot give to you what I do not have within me, all right? I don't have it in me. So with that said, here is my admittedly casual review of the opening number, Mama Who Bore Me, Man Alive. I'm snoozing over here. It's a honk shoe. Honk shoe. More like, Mama, you bore me. You bore me. Am I right? So funny. Lea Michele sounds fantastic. From the moment she opens her mouth, she's an asshole. A truly awful person. But the pipes... the pipes are objectively calling. The problem is the material and the tone. Spring Awakening is positively swimming in songs that sound just like this one, all of them equally maudlin and delivered with a husky intensity that is indistinguishable from a yawn. I never connect with Steven Sater's lyrics, which are too thickly poetic and abstract for their own good, when they're not gleefully crude, and as a result, I never care about these characters. I do not care about Fenla or her friends. We're skating across an emotional plateau that extends all the way to the horizon, and the effect is deadening. A note on Bill Jones's choreography. Throughout the 2007 Tony Awards performance, Leah routinely draws circles around her breasts and makes similarly negligible gestures with her hands. And I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of it. It reeks of movement rehearsals during which lazy directors and choreographers put the onus of staging a work on their actors while citing a desire for collaboration. And have you ever been in a fucking movement rehearsal? Can I just continue to rant about this? If you're an actor who's ever been in a movement rehearsal where you're devising, has anyone ever used that term? Let's devise how the show shall move and look and sound. And you just work and sweat your ass off, coming up with shit, improvising, essentially, and the director and or choreographer just sort of look at you and go, no, try something else. No, try something else. No, try something. Here's an idea. Why don't you fucking do the work that you are assigned to do? All right? I will execute what you tell me to do. I fucking hate that shit. Anyway, and what do we get? Anyway, out of that collaboration, I'll tell you what we get in this instance. Slow-mo voguing. That's what we get. I've done moves like this. I know what I'm talking about. They do not capture the audience's attention. They are merely distracting. It's theatrical, some might say. It's cloying, is what I say. The choreography also reads as fake American Sign Language, especially after you watch the Deaf West Theater cast perform via actual ASL. You know what's 1,000 times more evocative and affecting? Because it's an actual form of communication? ASL. Now, don't get me started on the Mama Who Bore Me reprise. We're not gonna hear that. It's, you know, it's real rollickin', and it involves a distressing amount of white girl pop and lock. I did not appreciate the white girl on the end during the Tony's performance from 07. Mama, pushing my shoulders forward. It really comes off as problematic. I'll just use that word. I don't know if I need to see a white girl going, yeah. No!
that I dreamed there was an angel who could hear me through the wall. As I cried out like in Latin, this is so not life at all. Help me out of this nightmare, then I heard her silver call. She said, just give it time, kid, I come to one and all. She said, give me that hand, please, and the itch you can't control. Let me teach you how to handle all the sadness in your soul. Oh, we'll work that silver magic, then we'll aim it at the wall. She said, love may make you blind, kid, but I wouldn't mind at all. And her breasts, and the music's like the one thing I can even get it all. And those breasts, I mean, God, please just let those apples fall. It's the bitch of living,
bitch.
Ah, 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 with nothing going on, nothing going on. Just the bitch of living, asking what went wrong. Do they think we want this? So nasty in those khakis.
Got my whole life like some test.
Then there's Mariana wheeling as if she'd return my call. It's like just kiss some ass, man.
Yes, the bitch of living, the song for anyone who still puts an obscene, no pun intended, amount of stock in their ability to say words like bitch. You know, this ain't Brigadoon, bitch! Like, yeah, I get it. Hey, shush. I've been here for a minute, okay? I get it. Can we talk about the Simple Plan vocals, the whiny, parched quality everyone appears to be pursuing in this number? It's not appealing to me. And if you disagree, let me know, but I'm pretty sure that vocal style was already on the outs by 06. I'm sorry, I can't be perfect. It's the bitch of living. The bitch. Enough. We had, as a society, moved on from all of that, right? I mean, shocking that Broadway would be behind the curve on what's hip. Shocking that theater kids would be behind the curve on what's hip. Another question, this one relating to the 2007 Tony Awards on CBS. How is it that we can say the word bitch on CBS a dozen times, but the phrase, my teacher and her breasts, is altered to read as, my teacher and her chest? The Deaf West theater actors do say breasts during their Tony Awards performance, and that is what we like to call progress. Yes, we are finally allowed to say the word breasts on TV. It really does speak to an insane misogyny that you can say bitch as many times as you fucking want on CBS, but don't you? No, not in 07. You will not talk about breasts. You will say chest. All right? Okay.
Just to unreal all this, watching the words fall from my lips.
Baby.
hypotheses.
Haven't you heard the word of your body?
Don't feel a thing.
You heard the word of my wanting. Oh, I'm gonna be wounded. Oh, I'm gonna be your wound. Oh, I'm gonna bruise you.
Chosen to award gold stars to Lea Michele and Jonathan Groff. Yes, that's one star for you, Lea. There you go. And one star for you, Jonathan. You cutie. There you go. What can I say? They make for a lovely duo, and their rendition of The Word of Your Body deserves to be rewarded. You will have to share this trophy, though. No, Lea. No, Lea. What did I just say? You have to share it with Jonathan. No. The trophy symbolizes your collaborative spirit, your collaborative spirit. And that is why it must be shared. Get away. Lea. Do not shit on the trophy. Bad. Bad, Lea. Bad. Stop it. Sorry about that. Where was I? Oh, yes. quote. Oh, I'm gonna be wounded. Oh, I'm gonna be your wound. Quote. That's a rare example of Stephen Sater's lyrics cutting through his own white noise and landing a welcome blow to the ear. Alas, this victory is undermined by the immediate follow-up to those lines. Quote. Oh, I'm gonna bruise you. Oh, you're gonna be my bruise. Quote. Diminishing returns, Stephen. You should have pulled the ripcord. Huh? Yes, you can. Yes, Stephen, you can have a gold star despite this this criticism of mine. Let it never be said I am a withholding monster of a musical man. Lea, what are you doing? Stop. No! Stop shitting on Jonathan!
From my mind, it's broken inside. I'm a man and a child. I'm at home with a ghost who got left in the cold, who knocks at my peace with no keys to my soul.
Heal away to win.
the song Walk Away from our most recent subject, How Now Dow Jones, The Mirror Blue Night is a more rewarding experience if you can tune out the lyrics and focus on Duncan Sheik's music and orchestrations. I'm sorry, Steven Sater, but your lyrics are congealing into a humongous pile of melancholic mush. It's basically impossible for me to separate one thought from the other, from another, from another. But Duncan, you get a gold star for this song. Your work has a similar problem across the board where, you know, where everything tends to run together and form a brooding slurry, but there's fun to be had in this instance. Oh, here's a hot take before we move on to our next clip. More often than not, the Spring Awakening score sounds like Bono and the Edge's score for Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, which we recently covered on Patreon. Too much navel-gazing, fellas. I'm lost in the sauce over here.
So maybe I should be some kind of laundry line. Hang their things on me, and I will swing dry. You just wave in the sun through the afternoon, and then see, they come to say,
Gallagher Jr. and Lauren Pritchard make for another damn fine pair, and so for their performance of Don't Do Sadness / Blue Wind, I award them one gold star apiece and a trophy, of course. See, Leia? See how John and Lauren are sharing the trophy? Yeah, yes, Duncan, I'm sorry, you do deserve a gold star for my earlier, compliments. Here you go. No trophy, though. No. And no, Steven, you don't get a trophy either. No, I'm sorry. I'm fresh out of trophies, all right. I'm so sorry. In related news, I sang Don't Do Sadness as part of a benefit or something. That sounds right, a concert benefit for a storefront theater. If I have my facts right, that's what the situation was. It was not a good performance, to be clear. I've always had an issue with shifting into my head voice, my falsetto range, and that hairpin turn was really difficult coming right out of college. Oh, no, that was not a trick I had in my bag. And everyone would say, you know how people are so helpful? They would always say, but it's easy, just do it. But it's easy, just do it. These are professionals who would say these things to me. But it's easy, just do it. Fuck you! But this podcast isn't about me. Is it? No, it's not. Of all the angsty white boy numbers in Spring Awakening, Don't Do Sadness is by far the best of the lot. Maybe I'm just saying that because I have a deeper connection to it. I don't know. It helps that Pritchard is there to offset Gallagher's moaning with a refreshing gust of pixie dream girl whimsy. That does help.
Yeah, you're fucked, all right.
Look, if nothing else, can we at least agree you only get to fetishize one curse word per Broadway musical? Again, I invoke the concept of diminishing returns. Everyone got to feel real naughty sitting next to their moms and dads, grandma, grumpo. Hey, you know, they got to sit next to them while the actors threw bitch back and forth like it was a frisbee. But now, where are we now? Are we getting the same thrill out of hearing them say fuck this much? Methinks not. Methinks the well is bone dry. There's a point near the end of Totally Fucked when the whole thing devolves into an endless cycle of blah 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 blah. And wow, is that shit unengaging. Supremely ironic how the kids are commenting on the empty words of adults with a truth to power statement that is similarly without substance. Blah, blah, blah. Fuck you. Okay, children, I gotta tell ya, this ain't exactly stirring my soul. Blah, blah, blah. Enough with the blah, blah, blah.
Come cream away the bliss. Travel the world within my lips. Fondle the pearl of your distant dreams. Haven't you heard the word of your body? From now, tonight will seem unbelievably beautiful.
And in the meantime?
Why not?
On my way here this afternoon, I thought perhaps we'd only talk.
So are you sorry we...
No, I love you, Hanshin, as I have never loved anyone.
And so you should.
Okay, this is the part of the show when I decide to get petty. And I know. You're thinking, this is that part of the show? It's only just now arrived, this part of which you speak. And to you, I say, shush, quiet! I blame Jonathan Wright and Gideon Glick's interpretations of Hanshin and Ernst on their director, Michael Mayer. Michael, what's going on with these fairly cursed character voices? Hanshin sounds like Droopy Dog by way of Oscar Wilde.
As well you should. I'm Hanshin, I'm a child. I'm gay, I'm so gay.
And Ernst sounds like Salad Fingers. What's happening? I'm in love with you. This is drama. This is something I'm supposed to take seriously. Why do the gay guys have to sound like cartoons when characters like Venla and Melchior get to be affectless ingenues? And what am I talking about? This is 2006. Of course the gays are presented as trembling offbeat dodos. Queer representation in that first decade of the new millennium was a near total wasteland. And you might say, would you prefer it if the gay characters sounded exactly like the straight characters? And to you, I would say, I would prefer it if they did not sound like condescending caricatures. That's what I would prefer. I'm grumpy this week, all right? I'm bummed out by how much this show did not engage me. It's the distinction I don't care for, okay? The straights sound like this. They get to just have voices while the gay sounds like, the gay guy sounds like this. And the other one, kissing. There's a color commentary at work here that I do not like. There's something fishy. I can fucking smell it. It smells like fish. It is now time to stop talking about the score for Spring Awakening because I have nothing more to say about it, and it is now time to hand it over to our fine, fine sponsor, 5678 Coffee. Take it away, 5678. If I said you could have this can of 5678 coffee free by reading U.S. News and World Report, I bet I know what you'd say. First you'd say, nice coffee, Tony Roberts, tell me more about it. Then you'd say, U.S. News and World Report? That's because you don't really understand U.S. news. But it's quite simple. Look, start with a weekly news magazine like Time or Newsweek. First, take out everything about Brooke Shields, Madonna, and Michael Jackson. Then take out all the gossip. Finally, take out the food, fashion, and fads. Yeah! Right into the fucking trash can. Frankly, you've got some room in here now. So put in pages that really mean something to you, like getting the most personal value out of today's technology, finding career and financial opportunities in today's shifting marketplace, getting a quick bottom-line perspective on news events and business trends, getting smarter about new developments in science, society, and health, ways to make your taxes shrink and your money grow, facts, figures, and practical information you can act on. There, now you've got U.S. News. Now about the coffee. It's available in men's or women's classic style. The can is genuine leather, and the Swiss quartz movement is accurate within 15 seconds a month. And it's free with your paid subscription. How much is that? We'll give you a price that's only half the regular subscription cost of Time Magazine. Call 1-800-228-ARTS right now to get 27 weekly issues of U.S. News for only 56 cents each. Now that's a bargain. In fact, it's a savings of over 70% off the cover price. And it gets even better. We'll bill you just 3 easy payments of only $4.97. You want fluff? Buy a pillow, shitfuck! You want news and a free can of coffee? Call now for U.S. News. Now, where is that article about Brooke Shields? Let's see. Ooh! Ha ha ha! She's a hot tamale! Final thoughts regarding Spring Awakening, and I offer these thoughts to you with the utmost sincerity. Please disregard all of my sarcasm and my cynicism throughout this episode. Set that aside for the moment. That is genuine commentary. I do not apologize or write that off, but just consider what I'm about to say and take it to heart. More power to the show's fans. Seriously, I defer to you in the end, and I am so glad that you found a musical you can love with all of your heart. No one can take that from you, not even me, the most powerful musical man on the planet Earth. Now, in 2007, as a reminder, the winner of the Tony Award for Best Musical was Spring Awakening, and the additional nominees that season were Curtains, Grey Gardens, and Mary Poppins. Did Spring Awakening deserve to win Best Musical over the rest of these nominees? No. I would say give that medallion to Grey Gardens. That's what I have to say. And what I have to say goes. I'm taking it all back. My word is God. Let us now rank Spring Awakening against all of the other shows we have talked about here on the podcast. If you want to take a look at this ranked list of ours, go to patreon.com/musicalmanpod. You'll see a pinned post right at the top of that page. Click through. You'll be taken to our link tree. Click through to our Google spreadsheet, and the second tab of that sheet is where you will find this ranked list of ours. Spring Awakening, you shall land at number 96 between Raisin at number 95 and A Year with Frog and Toad at number 97. This does feel way too high, I'm sure, from your perspective. And honestly, for mine, it also seems high, but hey, you know, it is what it is for now. There's always the opportunity and the possibility of change. So, Spring Awakening, I don't know. Ultimately, you know, don't get too comfortable. Show-related ephemera, let's talk about it. I'm pretty sure the clip we're about to hear is from Season 1, Episode 4 of 90210, which first aired on September 16th, 2008. This is the reboot series of 90210. In this scene you're about to hear, Tabitha Wilson, a character played by the always incredible Jessica Walter, directs a high school production of Spring Awakening. Let's hear it.
Mama who bore me. Bleeding. You have no passion, girls. You gotta sing like your privates are on fire. For God's sake. Just because you're a bunch of rich brats doesn't mean you can't have angst. Channel it.
This is a song about your mother. She's been lying to you about sex, and it pisses you off. But you're all teenagers, so I know you hate your mothers. I hated mine. Use the anger. I will show you how it's done.
Grandma, maybe I...
Annie, I'm not your grandmother here. I'm the director. Everyone! Mama who bore me. Mama who gave me. Mama the angel. You've got to move from the hips and claim the stage.
Grandma, you're being a tyrant. Fuck you. I'm not your grandma when I'm working. I love it. Do we need to talk about Rise, the 2018 NBC series about a high school attempting to stage its own production of Spring Awakening? The show I specifically chose to leave out of our TV VIP coverage over on Patreon because I wasn't convinced that it was a truly musical TV show. Emo Glee, that's what I call it. No, we don't. We don't have to talk about that show, so we're all done to determine which show we discuss next. We'll need to take a ride on the musical carousel, otherwise known as the random number generator I named after that classic Rodgers and Hammerstein show, Toast Points at Dawn. Everyone ready? Then away we go! I have stepped off of the musical carousel and I have determined that the year is 1999. The next subject of our main feed was a nominee for the Tony Award for Best Musical. It did not win the award back in 99. No, no, no. In fact, it only ran for 61 performances on Broadway, and the name of the show is The Civil War. Frank Wildhorn's The Civil War. Very interested to see what that show is all about. And this episode, oh, will drop on the main feed Wednesday, May 1st, okay? We're gonna be taking a couple of weeks to produce a new $1 a month bonus episode for the Patreon, and then I'm just gonna take a week off, baby, because that's what we all deserve, right, Patty and Benny? Yes, I agree. We need that week off to recharge, refuel, and come back to you so we can talk about the Civil War. Hey, do me a favor. Go to patreon.com/musicalmanpod to find out how you can support the show financially. As a reminder, 100% of every monthly payout is donated to the Planned Parenthood Action Fund. I will also match that amount with a separate donation to the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. You can donate $1, $3, $5, or $10 a month. If you donate $1 a month, you get Monday early access to all of these main feed episodes, as well as a verbal shout-out each and every time we get together on the main feed. Hey, thank you so much for donating at least $1 a month. Caroline, Helena, Greg, Andy, Elizabeth, Aaron, Jason, Jack, Vitor, Sydney, Katie, Elena, Anton Ross, HJG, Jared, Eli, David, Dave, Christopher Neal, Brian, Robin, Liz, Carrie, Maddie, Jonathan, Marcus, Rob, Shauna, Shianti, Roberto, Jordan, Ashley, Chris, JC, Jenna, Aaron, Lily, Haley, Brandon, Brad, Matt, Zach, and Marisol. You also get 21 bonus episodes regarding the following subjects: the 73rd Annual Tony Awards, a trailer review for the film Cats, The Little Mermaid Live, a full review of the film Cats, Emma at Chicago Shakespeare Theater, Take Me to the World, a Sondheim 90th birthday celebration, Hamilton via Disney Plus, Documentary Now, original cast album, Co-op, John Mulaney and the Sack Lunch Bunch, Jingle Jangle, A Christmas Journey, Dolly Parton's Christmas on the Square, Arlo the Alligator Boy, a trailer review for Steven Spielberg's West Side Story, Vivo, the Tony Awards present Broadway's Back, Diana, Annie Live, The Notebook at Chicago Shakespeare Theater, Beauty and the Beast, a 30th celebration, the 1999 animated film, The King and I, and, most recently, Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, with our special guest Brandon Shockney. Now, remember, the next $1 a month bonus episode is dropping Wednesday, April 17th, so keep your ears open for that, all right? I'm not going to tell you what the subject is. It's a mystery, all right? It's a mystery. $1 a month patrons will also get season one, that's 12 episodes of Radio Boy, a special series for which I check in with myself via the non-musical theater songs that make me feel more like myself. And finally, you get all 16 episodes of M3, The Movie Musical Man, a series for which we watch movie musicals that are tied by common themes. $3 a month will get you everything I've already described, plus a musical shout-out in the style of a character, actor, or composer of your choosing, all 10 episodes of Wildcats Everywhere, a high school musical podcast, a special one-off all about Julie and the Phantoms, and all 14 episodes of TV VIP, a series dedicated to musical TV shows. $5 a month will get you everything I've already described, plus you'll get to stop the musical carousel and determine what show I discuss on the podcast. You get seasons 1 and 2, that's 24 episodes, of All I Ask of You, an advice show hosted by the Phantom of the Opera, all 14 episodes in our Broadway and Chicago review series, and volumes 1 through 6 of Shout About It. These are collections, compendiums, if you will, of 5, 6, 7, 8 coffee ads and musical shoutouts from the first 150 episodes of the show. And in our final top tier, $10 a month will get you everything I've already described, plus exclusive announcements regarding future subjects of the main feed. We actually just posted, all of that information for the next 10 main feed episodes. Oh, they already know what we're talking about. You also get The Snub Club. That's season 1 of The Snub Club, actually. 12 episodes. That is a series dedicated to Broadway musicals that were snubbed. They were not nominated for the Tony Award for Best Musical. And last, but certainly not least, all 12 episodes of Turn It Off, a series dedicated to off-Broadway musicals. If you're listening to the show via Apple Podcasts or Podchaser, please take a moment to write a 5-star review. If you're streaming the show, you could be doing that through Spotify, Audible, or Podbean, musicalmanpod.podbean.com. And hey, why not send me an email at musicalmanpod@gmail.com? Thanks, as always, to Patty and Benny, in the booth out there in Chicago in the Stage Left studio. Thank you to Alex Green for our beautiful logo. And hey, thank you to Zach Little for our fabulous intro and outro music. Oh, you know what that sound means. Yes! Now, just when the fun is starting, comes the time for parting? Oh well, we'll catch up some other time, specifically on the next episode of The Musical Man. So long, farewell, auf Wiedersehen, and good night!